It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Thursday the 6th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. The Winter Olympics start tomorrow in the Russian city of Sochi. Olympians, officials, and reporters have been arriving all week with lots of devices in tow. And that means there's been a lot of talk about digital surveillance. Russia's government doesn't have the best record in, say, protecting freedom of the press. Ars Technica's senior business editor Cyrus Farivar has been looking at how to use technology while at the Games.
There's good evidence to suggest that Russian authorities will be using a device called a Stingray.
That doesn't sound terrifying at all.
A Stingray is a device that's used by law enforcement here in the U.S. It can be used to log, you know, which cell phone was in which location at one time. So if Russia just wants to see who's coming in and out of various events, they could very easily do that.
You have also been looking at how this kind of surveillance might impact journalists who are covering the games.
Journalists traveling to Russia for the first time need to be very aware that it's highly likely that their email sent unencrypted can be monitored by the Russian government. I think that's a very safe assumption. I would advise people to educate themselves about how to use proper encryption on email, using things like Tor or a VPN or things like that.
Can you explain a little bit about how Tor works, but also maybe talk about what people should be doing if they're using a cell phone?
With respect to Tor, a VPN provides an encrypted connection from your computer to another computer somewhere else. Tor takes the sort of concept of a VPN, but relies on layering. Rather than providing just one connection to somewhere else, it's providing multiple hops, rerouting your traffic throughout the world, making it very, very difficult to penetrate. As far as mobile security is concerned, I would say if you're going somewhere where you don't want to potentially be followed, don't carry a phone with you. Similarly, if there are things that you don't want people to intercept online, keep them offline.
Cyrus Farivar, senior business editor for the website Ars Technica. Cyrus, thanks, man.
My pleasure, as always.
It's also worth noting, by the way, that when looking at the origin of hacking attacks around the globe, Russia is often at the top of the list. Speaking of which, we've been covering congressional hearings on the massive data breach that impacted 70 million shoppers at Target and other retailers. Sources now tell cybersecurity expert Brian Krebs that hackers got in through the HVAC, not the actual vents, but a third-party heating and air conditioning company. It's called Fazio Mechanical Services, and it worked on some of Target's HVAC systems. Hackers got access to HVAC workers' information, including logins for Target's network. The investigation is ongoing. YouTube used to be a place that was mostly about curiosities, bits of original unedited video clips by amateurs. Then people started getting serious. The amateurs started getting famous because of what and how much video they were putting on the website. YouTube started selling ads on all those videos and giving some of that money to creators. Leslie Kaufman is a media reporter for the New York Times. She wrote a story this week on how hard it can still be to make the big bucks, even when you're a super YouTuber. Leslie, thanks for chatting with us.
My pleasure to be here.
Can you just explain to me first how people make money on YouTube?
Well, there are a variety of ways, but the way I think that most people know about is if you put content up on YouTube, they will give you a button to press and you say, you may sell ads against my content and I will keep some percentage of that money and you will keep some percentage of that money.
And the idea is that they'll sell ads that, you know, run before the video starts.
Exactly. That maddening 15 to 30 second ad that you must watch before you get the music video you actually want to listen to.
How are people doing, people who are hoping to be self-made YouTube stars?
Right. So when YouTube first started, it really didn't have a promise of making money. It's like everyone, you throw your stuff up and it'll just be fun. But over time, YouTube has come to understand that it wants lots of revenue. And the way it gets revenue is high-quality content. So it made this essential implicit deal, which is you give us high-quality content and we'll get ads for you. The problem is, it has not been in the viewership. YouTube is huge and continues to grow. It's coming online so fast in terms of viewership that it's hard to imagine, but it's also coming online in terms of content. So there's so much content coming on that they cannot sell the inventory out to advertisers. So it is very hard to make income there, especially if you're putting any amount of money into your content.
That is kind of a rock and a hard place problem for some smaller content creators.
I mean, the woman who's the star of our story, who's working very hard, and she's actually a little discouraged about our future. I mean, she still makes six figures. She's still making between $100,000 and $130,000. I think there are a lot of people who might look at that number and be pretty excited, especially if you saw the kind of sort of homemade videos she makes out of her home a lot of the time, though she, too, has upped her quality.
This is Olga Kay. She's a former juggler.
Yes, she's a former juggler from Russia.
Hey, Mush Army, it's me, Olga Kay. Welcome back to Mushville Channel. And we're continuing here with the
She arrives in the United States and is making a living of six figures out of her living room playing video games and selling makeup. It's kind of a crazy world.
Leslie Kaufman is a media reporter at the New York Times. Leslie, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And before we go, Twitter released its first quarterly earnings report yesterday, and the little bluebird did better than expected, earning $242 million in revenue last quarter. Some investors weren't super psyched, though, because growth in the number of Twitter monthly users was not sky high, ending 9 million up at 241 million. If you think 241 million sounds like a lot, compare that number to the total number of Facebook monthly users. 1.2 billion. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.